call a meeting of the State Government Finance to order. Welcome, everybody. We are fortunate to have our state auditor, Rebecca Otto, with us today to give us an overview of the state auditor's office. Welcome, Ms. Otto.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Otto. I'm the state auditor, and I am here today, delighted to be here today, but I'm here today to present our 2008-2009 biennium budget proposal. The Office of State Auditor is an office that not a lot of people know a lot about, so what I wanted to do is do a brief overview of the office, and then we'll go over what we're asking for. I tried to keep it very simple. The mission of the office: the state auditor oversees over $20 billion a year in local government spending, so we are an oversight office. The office performs audits of local government financial statements, investigates allegations of wrongdoing, reports on local government finances and trends, and oversees TIF districts and Firefighter Relief Association pension funds. Each year, the auditor's office performs approximately 160 financial and compliance audits. We review approximately 400 single audit reports. We handle over 100 special investigative matters related to financial wrongdoing. And we collect and analyze financial data from over 3,300 local governments. And we hope that you feel free to contact us if you ever want financial information on local government. We have a lot. Sometimes you hopefully will see our reports. We do send emails to you when they come out. The last one we put out was analysis of municipal liquor stores. I know that is a very popular report. I didn't believe it, but it's true. Each year, the auditor's office reviews investment and regular reporting for approximately 730 public pension funds. We oversee expenditures of the estimated 2,200 tax increment financing districts. You've probably heard about those. We publish comprehensive reports and analyses of Minnesota's local government finances, and we help local governments achieve best practices. We have a legal and special investigation division, and I wanted to point out some of the fruit of our labor. When there's fraud or wrongdoing within local government spending, we have a special investigations unit that checks into that, and it uncovers wrongdoing. I'm going to point out a few you may have heard about. Chiron Charter School. Our staff found there was misappropriation of public funds and theft, and that was about $250,000. There was the PAC4 Family Collaborative, where there was misappropriation of public funds and theft, and that was about $29,000. Then there was the National School Fitness Foundation, which you may have heard of as well. That was an illegal pyramid Ponzi scheme. It started back in 2004, our investigation. The courts just did their final work. That was to the tune of about $60 million, and that was a national scheme. So it was actually a citizen that brought it to our attention. So that's an example of some of the good work that that division does. We do educational outreach to local government folks and stakeholders within local government because we want them to do what's right rather than make mistakes and do things that are not right. So in 2006, over 250 people attended the Pension Division statewide training. Over 200 people attended the TIF Division statewide training. Over 110 local government staff attended Audit Practice Division trainings. And over 50 local government finance staff trained in legal and internal controls in 2006. Now I'm going to switch to the budget. So this is our proposed fiscal year 2008-2009 budget. We used criteria to put together this budget that I want you to be aware of. The criteria that we used was that anything we ask for has to fulfill statutory responsibilities. It'll allow us to realize legislative mandates. It will ensure transparency and accountability in local government finances, and it will minimize the impact on the general fund because we do realize there are limited dollars. The budget is based on the 2006-2007 biennium appropriation, which is our base budget. It includes the governor's compensation adjustment. It has our staff retention change item, and it has our JobZ oversight change item. And that will equal our 2008-2009 proposed budget. Okay, so on to the numbers. The base budget for 08-09 is $16.5 million. The change items include the governor's compensation adjustment, which totals $497,000 for the biennium. Our staff auditor's retention item, change item, is $586,008 and $455,009, totaling about $1 million. I want to bring to your attention that this retention item, the money we're asking for above and beyond the governor's compensation adjustment, is simply to allow us to meet our contractual obligations for step increases with our employees. That's all it is. So all we're asking to do is to keep our staff to do the work that they're doing. We also have job Z oversight included in our budget request, and we tried to come forward with the most conservative proposal that we could, being the most efficient model we could to begin oversight of job Z. So that's $160,000 in 08 and $210,000 in 09 for a total of $370,000 for the biennium. I want to break it down by division for you. You'll notice that audit practice is the majority of the budget request. Our office is an oversight office, and the majority of our employees are within our audit practice division. Where the money is spent, I love graphs and pie charts. I was a teacher. And as you'll see, audit practice is 65% of the ask. The money will fund audit practice. And then you'll see the other divisions, tax increment financing, constitutional office, pension, legal special investigations, government information, and operations management. Our proposed fiscal year 08-09 budget, the great news is that over 80% of our general fund appropriation we're asking for is recovered by fees and reimbursements or offsets. So it has a very low impact on the general fund. We have a slide here that shows the portion recovered by fees and reimbursements or offsets by division. You'll notice that audit practice is all blue. That means that 100% is recovered through fees and audit practice. TIF, which is the second one from the right, is normally 100%, but you'll notice that the $370,000 is the job Z, which would not be recovered through fees because there isn't, we can't figure out a way to recover fees through that program. Okay. The expenditures by cost group. You will notice that the majority of our costs are our personnel. It's almost 90% of our budget, so the state auditor's office is people. And what we're asking for is funding to keep our people in place to do the work that we are statutorily obligated to do. I want you to notice, too, that travel is at 1%. We do some traveling in our office. It's to get out to our clients around the state. We do have regional offices, so it keeps our costs down in travel. Our staff retention change item, again, between the governor's compensation adjustment and our staff retention request, which is to keep our people and allow us to pay the step increases to our employees that is required within the contracts, it's $1.5 million. Again, the great news is there are offsets. So after the offsets, nearly 80% of our change items are recovered by our offsets. And the net impact on the general fund will be $319,000, which is a 1.9% increase. So we tried to come to you with a conservative proposal to keep our staff. The job Z oversight change item, we were given oversight of job Z in 2005 by the legislature. The office is requesting funding to fulfill the statutory obligation. I tried to come forward with the most conservative proposal that I could. And so, again, we're asking for $210,000 in 08 and $160,000 in 09 for a total of $370,000, which is a 2.2% increase.
Ms. Sano?
Yes.
May I ask you, please, why the reduction in 09 down $50,000?
Mr. Chair, members, you're referring to job Z?
Yes.
Because it'll take us a little more work to get it going initially, and we're hoping that once we have something in place that it won't be quite as expensive.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the finance director for the office. I think in the first year we had additional training for the staff and some setting up of computer systems to capture the data, and I think the computer portion was $50,000 just by itself.
Okay. Thank you.
So the net impact on the general fund, if you take the governor's compensation adjustment with our staff auditor's request for staff retention, which simply allows us to keep the people we have, realizing that we were cut by 15% in 2003 and we've had a flat budget since then, we are to bare bones within our divisions. We don't have any room right now to lose another person, to continue to do our work, and to be able to put out numbers with integrity and have quality control. So if you take the governor's compensation, our staff retention request, and the JOBSY oversight, the total net impact on the general fund is $689,000. The goals. The goal of the office is to help Minnesota's local government succeed by providing the tools and resources necessary to be successful stewards of over $40 billion in public funds during the budget cycle of 2008-2009. Yeah. Our office does auditing, investigating, reporting, and educating. Thank you for your time, and I would be happy to try to answer any questions that you may have.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Now, I should know this because I've been watching it for years and probably did it, but right now, do your audits go into the general fund and then get appropriated out of the general fund, or have we put it as a revolving fund? We've done both, I know it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, our budget's a direct appropriation from the general fund, okay. And then the revenues we collect are non-dedicated revenues to the general fund.
So we need to appropriate them out of the general fund.
That's correct.
That's right. And so what I've asked, before is, you know, the groups like the National Science Foundation, National Institute of Health, and so forth, do all kinds of things for the university. And besides paying the amount in the grant, the university also charges an overhead fee. And so the issue is, then, could we, with this huge amount that goes into audit practice, could we charge an overhead fee on the audit practice that would then make up part of the rest of the general fund appropriation? Like, for example, the JOBSY oversight, which is a state issue. I think with the amount, we're looking at a very small, I know I don't expect you to suggest this, but if it was suggested to you, could you figure out what we'd need to do that?
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Representative Kahn, currently the statute says that we're to recover only the costs of our audit division for performing audits and any overhead associated directly with that. So beyond that, I guess it would be up to the legislature to make that decision.
Okay.
Ms. Adam?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn and members, I also wanted to say that, you know, there's a fine balance, too, with what we charge local government, units of local government, because they have limited funds as well. And so our office, number one, follows statute in terms of what we charge, and number two, tries to be very sensitive to that fact and being really efficient with our work and things. So, and also, I put this back up because, for instance, there's a reason why we don't charge for legal and special investigations, because there's a law, 609.546, I believe it is, or maybe it's 456, that requires that local government employees and elected officials in local government, if they suspect fraud, that they have to report to us. Well, if they think they're going to get charged for that and it's going to have an impact on their money, it might be a disincentive to report. So there's a reason for that, too. And then the Constitutional Office, again, you know, I serve on six state boards and things like that, so there are things I do that would be hard to justify charging to local government unless you decided that was something that should be done.
What about the government information section? Isn't that information that's, Mr. Chairman, so what about, isn't that information that's going to benefit the audit practice and so forth?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, and members, Government Information Division, there we do recover some money there, and I believe that comes out of LGA, and that allows us to take, so we collect all this financial information from local governments, and I believe that the fees we recover there actually come out of LGA. There's a small portion.
Okay.
And it's capped.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Representative,
trying to remember what the law is. Local governments don't need to use you. Can they also get a private audit that you just look over? Is that true? Or do they?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, we audit counties, and we do have a process where some counties use private CPA firms. We let them out for a three-year period, and then we review after that. We, at any time, as an office, can audit a unit of local government if we feel that it's in the public's best interest. And then we have some units that are on a rotational basis. So there's a mixture.
Well, Mr. Chan, but the choice is to a certain extent is with the local unit of government. No.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, I'd like to have our Deputy Auditor of Audit Division, who's been with the office for many years, maybe come up and answer your question.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Krillinger. I'm the Deputy State Auditor. Mr. Chair and members, to your question, Representative Khan, the State Auditor's Office has statutory authority to audit counties and first-class cities, the Metropolitan Council, and some other organizations that are directly associated with counties and or the first-class cities. So by statute, we are required to do the do counties and the audits in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth.
But you're doing other. It doesn't your audit, aren't you also auditing other entities?
Yes, for the most part, those entities.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Chair.
The audits that we do perform are by statutory authority, and they're either counties, first-class cities, or organizations that are associated with those entities. And the Metropolitan Council is also audited on a statutory authority basis. Okay.
How do other cities, other than first-class cities, how are their audits taken care of?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, and members, the statute allows the other cities to be audited either by CPA firms or by our office, and that's at the choice of the city councils.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. How many of them, Mr. Chairman, how many of them have, or what, can you get us some, maybe just get us the information, how many of them have chosen you and how many of them have chosen to have a private entity do it? And you don't have to answer. You don't have to answer that by memory. Just if you could get us some information on that, in terms of percentage.
Mr. Chair, Clinton. Representative Khan, and members, for the year ended December 31, 2005, we are to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. We are the city of Greenfield, and we also are the city of Faribault. The city of Faribault has a within their charter requirement to have the state auditor's office audit them once every 4 years. And so those were the only four audits that the five city audits that we conducted in 2005.
Well, what if, Mr. Chairman, what if we allowed counties to make the same kind of choice? I mean, I think we have counties that are smaller than some cities. What if we allowed counties to make the same choice? What would that do to you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, the legislature can decide whatever they want to.
Mr. Chairman, we usually like to ask before. We're fully aware of that, but
yes.
I've always considered it courtesy to ask.
Right, and I mean, I think the State Auditor's Office, we have highly professional staff that take great pride in their work. There is some rhyme and reason to having consistency. And I've checked in with many county folks who say that our office does a great job, and they've tried sometimes the private, and they've come back to us because they really like the work that we do. And I think there needs to be a balance between the private and state.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, how did they get to try the private? How did that happen?
Mr. Olinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, and members, back in 2003, after the budget reduction, our office had to make some decisions on staffing, and because of the result of that, we ended up with 15 fewer staff members than before. And then at that point in time, along with some cooperation with the counties, we made some decisions on which counties to audit and which ones not to.
Any other questions? Representative Swiggum?
Mr. Chairman, if you could, Auditor Otto, as I'm looking through your proposed budget, you have the staff retention line. Is that unique? I haven't seen that in any other agencies or departments that have come forward to us that they have their compensation adjustment, and then for a retention, I need this X amount of money. I haven't seen that in any other agency department. Have you?
You know, I haven't. Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, and members, I have not had the opportunity to see all of the different budget presentations. We're calling it staff retention, I guess, just to make it very clear that we've lost staff over the years, and after assessing the office, I don't believe we can afford to lose another person to continue to do our work and to do quality work and timely work. And so what it is we want to retain the staff we have, and that staff retention portion basically covers our step increases that are contractually obligated to do, to pay. So coupled with the governors, this is to allow us to maintain our current staffing levels and to fill up the vacancies that we have to continue to do our work.
Mr. Chairman,
Auditor
Otto, wouldn't every other agency or department or program face the same difficulties or consequences that you are, and couldn't they come to us with a staff retention addition to the compensation factor too?
Auditor Otto.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, and members, I suppose they could approach you, and however, you know, they can put it together however they want. We weren't told how to put it together, and we're not a state agency. We're actually a separate office, and the governor does not comment on. He realizes that we've had cuts, we've lost a lot of staff. So obviously, by saying here's a compensation adjustment, it's not saying it's enough for us, that it's going to take care of us. He's just recognizing that there's a need. We are allowed to go and ask for anything above and beyond that, any change items, and he won't comment on that because he knows that we know our offices. So we're coming forward just to say and ask the legislature to allow us to maintain the current staffing levels, because there's no more wiggle room in our budget if we're going to continue to do quality work, integrity in the numbers, timely audits, and also dealing with 609 reporting when people suspect fraud. The public wants us to provide oversight for this money. So what we're asking for is to be able to do that work, and that's all we're asking for. I think some people have asked for extra positions, some people have asked for new programs. I'm doing a very conservative ask, and some people have said, why didn't you ask for extra so they could cut back? I'm being very, very straightforward with you. I am asking for exactly what we need to keep the staff we have to be able to perform our job.
And we appreciate that. Representative Orban?
Thank you, Chairman Ward. I just wanted to comment that in the MNSCU budget and in the University of Minnesota budget, we saw a separate request for compensation increase and retention money, viewing the tasks of keeping staff as different from the compensation adjustment. So in the Higher Education Committee, we have seen requests just like that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think in that case, Representative Hortman, higher education was not given the 2% compensation adjustment. Is that correct in the governor's budget?
Representative Hortman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, actually, there are two separate line items in their budget. One is for retention and one is for compensation adjustment.
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, the addition here is that amount is totally made up by the audit fees.
By fees?
By the audit fees. All of the costs of doing the audit, which would include the staff retention, are made up by the audit fees. Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, this is one of the things that that we did a long time ago that you helped us do because we all believed it was good government, and it was actually started at a time when our esteemed Governor Carlson was the state auditor, when he had the separate revolving fund of the audit account, and he used the separate revolving fund for new carpets and new drapes in his office. And we got really irritated about that, and so we then made the audit fees come through the general fund. Of course, if you remember, we did a huge number. We got rid of something like 65 dedicated fees and made them all come through and get appropriated out through the general fund, which you can do if you're honestly looking at what the costs are and what the money is coming in. But now, with the problems that came later, everybody has now asked for their own dedicated revolving fund instead of having to deal with this, with the legislature substantively looking at it. This is one of the few that seems to have escaped. And now, you know, I'm thinking maybe we ought to give them a revolving fund. But the option of it is to take it through the budgeting process, but then to be understandable that if this was a revolving fund, we wouldn't even look at things like that.
Mr. Chair, point of comment, I assure you, we do not. I'm not putting a new carpet in. There's no drapes, and we don't even have a government relations person because there's no budget for it. But and I don't have a bill tracker. I don't have anything.
But you, Mr. Chairman, you do have the shower that Arnie Carlson put in for you.
Adorado.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, there is no shower. There's no shower.
Oh. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Adorado, and department staff.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we do have a couple items of business before we pick up the overview of the Attorney General's office. I hope they're here. Right. And we're looking to approve two sets of minutes. First one will be for the joint meeting on Monday, March 5th. So may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Monday, March 5th?
So
Representative Kahn moves. Approval of minutes for March 5th. Are there any corrections? Hearing none. Those approved. Now we're looking at the approval of the minutes for Tuesday, March 6th. Looking for a motion to approve the minutes of March 6th. President Poppy moves. Any corrections or additions? Questions? So moved. I've been informed by the staff that the Attorney General was scheduled to be here at 3 p.m. So I guess what I'd like to do or suggest is that we recess until 2 minutes to 3 p.m., 2:58. Is that fine with everybody?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So we'll be in recess until 2:58. So we're about ready to reconvene with the Attorney General and staff. So I will reconvene the State Gov Finance Division meeting. Welcome, Attorney General Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for having me.
And so we are going to have a overview of the Attorney General's office at this time.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to appear before the committee today. I very much appreciate it and appreciate the opportunity to be here. The Attorney General's office is essentially a law firm for the state of Minnesota. It provides what I think is very high quality legal representation to the state of Minnesota, all of the state agencies. We represent those agencies in litigation brought by the state of Minnesota, in lawsuits filed by the agencies, as well as represent the state of Minnesota when it's been sued and is a defendant in litigation. And really representing the state agencies is most of the work and most of the budget of the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office also has certain discretionary functions which form a smaller part of the office. Some of those types of activities include enforcing the civil laws, the consumer protection laws, the charities laws, antitrust laws on behalf of the state of Minnesota in a wide range of different areas when those laws have been violated or broken. In addition to that, in the area of criminal justice, the Attorney General's office does provide certain assistance to county attorneys in a variety of different matters. For example, in the criminal trial area, the Attorney General's office provides assistance to county attorneys in the rural parts of the state on things like homicide and drug cases, as well as provides assistance to county attorneys on things like appeals of criminal matters. We represent the Department of Public Safety on implied consent revocation matters involving drunk driving, represent the state of Minnesota on Medicaid fraud prosecutions, and also represent certain rural county attorneys on the civil commitment of sexual predators and sex offenders. So essentially, we're a very busy law firm. At any given time, I think we've got about 2,000 open matters or open files involving the state of Minnesota. And I think we deliver good bang for the buck to the state of Minnesota and its citizens, returning, saving, protecting taxpayer dollars. In fiscal year 2006, for example, by our estimates, we saved the state of Minnesota over $400 million in defense, by defending the state of Minnesota, saved the state in costs, and recovered or returned over $25 million in that fiscal year to the people of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota. I'm very committed as Attorney General to operating in a fiscally responsible manner. I think that's very important. The Attorney General's budget is essentially a service office, so our budget is primarily personnel, the lawyers and legal secretaries and investigators who form the office, and about 80% of our budget is in the personnel area because we are providing a service to the state of Minnesota. A little less than 10% of our budget is in leases, basically the lease that we need to rent from the in terms of staffing the office. And then about 10% is everything else, what you would need to operate a law firm. So things like Westlaw, postage, various expenses like that that you need to run a law firm, court filing fees and the like. We've, in the Attorney General's office, we have experienced some pretty severe budget cuts over the years. We've got about a third fewer attorneys today in the office than we did in 1999, about 181 fewer employees than in 1999. So in 1999, we had about 548 employees in the office, and today we have about 367 or so employees in the Attorney General's office. And again, that's a function of some of the budget cuts that have occurred. When you're in office, it's a service office. When the budget's cut, therefore personnel get cut. That's meant we've had to operate the office very tightly and efficiently, in some cases allocating resources from one area to address another area. You never know with those 2,000 open matters exactly what pops up or what's the most pressing concern at any given time for the state and its citizens. But we've tried to allocate our resources in a responsible fashion, and with the pinch of those budget cuts. We are asking for, I think, 13 additional attorneys, because we simply, it's very difficult to continue to absorb those budget cuts, and there's a growing need for legal services. Litigation's busier than ever before. There's always litigation involving the state. Some of the areas that I mentioned have really grown in terms of the civil commitment work and other areas. So that's kind of where things stand at this point in time, and I'd be happy to take or entertain any questions you all have.
Members? Any questions? Representative Kahn?
Yes. General Swanson, at one point we had a lot of departments had their own legal services. Was that totally stopped now, or is there still some legal services out in, with department? And I think it was kind of a mixed bag, too. Sometimes they were in the attorney, they were paid for by the Attorney General's office, but they were housed in the department, and sometimes they were actually hired by the department. How is that working now?
Attorney General Swanson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. Essentially, the Attorney General's budget is funded in a couple of different ways. One is through a general fund appropriation. There are certain state agencies that we have a partnership agency contract with where the agency directly funds the legal services. The attorneys are housed with the Attorney General's office, though, and basically the Attorney General's office is a law firm or the attorneys for the state of Minnesota, and so we provide that representation. There are some state agencies that have people who have law degrees, but they're not allowed to appear in court or to represent the state of Minnesota as attorneys. They may have a law degree, but they are not supposed to be involved in that type of legal representation. They can't appear in court, for example, on behalf of the state. Only the Attorney General's lawyers can.
Then following that along one of the what about with departments that have mixed funding, like Department of Natural Resources, which has a big game and fish component in the funding? Mm-hmm. How is the funding for that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, thank you for the question. It will depend on which agency is involved. For example, certain agencies, the Department of Health, Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation, agencies like that have these partner contract agencies, and we really sit down once a year with those agencies, negotiate with them in terms of what legal services they expect to need, what our rate is for those services, enter into what's called a partner agency contract or agreement, and then we bill against it and basically settle up typically at the end of the year in terms of if we provided excess legal services. Most of those contracts have a cushion where we can bill the excess. If we don't provide enough, most of them have a clause where we have to reimburse. So it depends on which agency of government it is. And a lot of the agencies also don't have partner agency agreements. For example, the Department of Commerce does not. We just provide within the general fund appropriation whatever legal services are needed.
But what I was Mr. Chairman, what I was interested in is in a complex agency like DNR or transportation with the transportation fund, how is the I'm interested, do we end up having, in fact, general funds subsidizing those special funds, or do the costs for the legal expenses that involve those special funds completely come out of those funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, essentially our contract will be with the DNR department or the transportation department, but then ultimately the agency sort of at that point determines which funds internally it uses to fund the legal service component of the partner agency agreement. So we're not involved in where they get the money to do that. We just simply have a contract saying they shall fund it to this amount.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Khan,
has anyone ever looked at that to see if the right funds are being charged?
Okay. Attorney General?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, I'm not aware of anybody looking at that at the agency level. It's possible the legislative auditor, as it looks at those particular agencies and how they're operating through its regular review, would take a look at that. I'm guessing that they would, but I don't know that for a fact.
Representative Hortman? Oh, sorry, Representative Connie, a follow-up?
Just following that, actually, Mr. Shepard pointed out to me the part of the statute that talks about the fee schedule, reimbursements, and so forth.
Okay.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Attorney General Swanson. I was wondering, the 13 attorneys, and you may have said this, and I may have missed it, do you see a particular area where you're adding attorneys?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, thank you for the question. What essentially what I've done is, as I mentioned, we've had these budget cuts. We're a third smaller than we were before in terms of the number of attorneys. In December, when during the transition, when I sort of helped put together the Attorney General's budget and looked at some of the growing areas, there were some areas that I targeted or looked at. Veterans assistance is one of those areas. We're getting complaints now like never before from members of the armed services who are indicating a variety of different legal problems that come up when it comes to serving their country, that they're deployed to Iraq and they need legal advocacy to get out of a cell phone contract or get out of a contract with a particular entity, and working with some of you here on the committee on legislation to address that. But it'll be things like that, or veterans needing access to their disability benefits. And so that is an area that didn't exist before, but yet we're providing the services and are requesting some funding to provide assistance. The civil commitment area of sex offenders, we do provide, as I mentioned, services to some of the rural county attorneys, in particular on that civil commitment work. And that's gone up where I think we now have about six attorneys in the Attorney General's office doing that work. In the past, there were probably two. I think in 2000, we had about four cases a year. Now we're up to about 35 cases a year. And as I look at the projections, that area is continuing to be very, very steep and growing. In the homicide area, we're very active providing assistance to, again, primarily the rural county attorneys. If you're a rural county attorney and you have one homicide in 30 years, you can call in an experienced prosecutor who will help you try that case. And so that's an area that has been growing. Predatory mortgage lending was something that we didn't have to grapple with as much before, and now it's affecting all parts of the state. And I expect that's one of the areas that I'm looking at as I look at it. But it's kind of it can shift over time. As I mentioned, with 2,000 open files at any given time, that's basically a very, very busy law firm. And so it can shift, and part of the responsibility of the Attorney General is to look at what the needs are at any given time and then try to allocate those resources into where the needs are. And so as I looked at it in December, those were some of the areas. In a year from now, there may be other needs that we have to reallocate or reprioritize.
Representative Hortman?
Follow up, just before I became a legislator, I was a legal aid attorney and sued landlords in the area of sexual and racial discrimination, and I know that your office is involved in some of that type of work. And where the private market really takes care of employment discrimination, there is a real strong need in the area of housing discrimination, and I'm sure other, you know, less smaller areas of practice related to discrimination. So the work that you do there is very important. And I saw the results in the budget book indicating $1.9 million was recovered for victims of discrimination, and I just would encourage you to keep that as a strong part of your office, you know, depending upon the needs and balancing that with the other demands that you have. But thank you for your work in that area.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I appreciate your comments, and I couldn't agree with you more. It is a very important area, so thank you for your comments and concern.
Representative Kahn.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, does that work originate usually through the Human Rights Department? Does it start there and then you act as their attorney?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, typically it would be originated through the Department of Human Rights, and then we act as their law firm or their attorney. Sometimes issues can crop up involving discriminatory practices, though, in a variety of different areas, and may implicate the consumer protection laws, for example, where certain classes or types of people are being discriminated against and fraud is being perpetrated against them, primarily because of who they are, color of their skin, that type of thing. And then we may have some original jurisdiction in that area.
Again, Mr. Chairman, sort of following up on the veterans' assistance issues, with part of our original jurisdiction, with part of our strange jurisdictions here, we have military affairs and someone else has veterans. And one of the things I'm interested in is, so military affairs would obviously cover anyone in the National Guard. And so is that, do you kind of make that, are you getting requests from people called up through the National Guard, too?
Attorney General?
That kind of thing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we are. It could be guardsmen and women. It could be reservists. It could be members of the armed forces. But it's really anybody serving the country who has those types of needs. And I'm very committed to providing those services. I formed a Veterans Assistance Unit in the Attorney General's office because there did seem to be a need for it. I'm also, though, committed to recognizing that there are other resources out there and not duplicating or overlapping on those resources. I want to be very efficient and prudent about how we address those concerns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as so many issues that came an expert on this listening to 10 minutes worth of NPR the other day, but there are these problems apparently on veterans, but, you know, and again, I'm not sure they distinguish so much between the regular I don't know if it's appropriate to even make the distinction between the regular Army and the National Guard now, which is our state responsibility. But the issue of people with who've suffered traumatic brain damage being asked to make serious decisions about whether they stay for a military medical program or whether they go get a veterans assistance program. And I don't know if the National Guard, I don't know what kind of programs apply to the National Guard. Do you have someone in your office who's sort of up on that?
Or General?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we do, through this Veterans Assistance Unit, we've trained some staff in the office and have actually worked with the National Guard to receive some of that training and have people who are trained to kind of triage or figure out which area has responsibility, how to get the veteran or the serviceman and woman into the right hands. And that's where I get into the we don't want to duplicate resources. But there are needs, and sometimes, because the Attorney General's office is a law firm and we do have attorneys, we can provide a service that seems to be unmet at this point in time through the particular nature of the office that we are.
Mr. Chairman, the other issue as part of that is the treatment in Walter Reed Hospital. Mm-hmm. Again, has anyone checked on, are there any Minnesota National Guard particularly, but Minnesota military people that are in that, has anyone asked that question? Is there anyone there who's...
Attorney General?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I'm not aware of the answer to that question as it relates to Walter Reed. I don't know the answer to that.
Could you find out or should we find out?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Kahn, I'd be happy to make some inquiries as well and get back to you on that.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Sellers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Attorney General, I was wondering in some of the, when we were going through the 13 new attorneys for Representative Hortman, there's a couple areas that you addressed that, you know, over time we've tried to correct down here. One personally I worked with, as he just walked in the room, Representative Lesh, on some of the sex offenders and the civil commitment. We heard loud and clear from the courts that, you know, using a mental defect law for a criminal offense, you know, lock them up, or you know, we're not going to let you use the civil commitment process anymore. So we've done our, what I would hope is at least three-fourths, if not all, of our job down here. I realize there's a few of those cases out there that are still, you know, for the next 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So is it the small counties that are asking for your assistance? Or I guess I'm just trying to understand where some of these civil commitments are going to be coming from, this large increase that you were talking of.
Attorney General?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, it is primarily the greater Minnesota counties that are asking for assistance, and you're right, it's essentially the tail of some of that work that there are people in the pipeline who have served their time in incarceration, yet are very, very dangerous individuals and are in need of treatment at the security hospital. And so what the Attorney General's attorneys can do is provide assistance to those county attorneys on those civil commitment matters, and it really runs the gamut of representation, but we essentially will represent the county in handling those types of civil commitment petitions. And the work has really gone up. I think, as I mentioned, in 2000 it was about 4 cases a year being referred by the Department of Corrections, and I think in 2006 it was something like 35 cases were referred to the counties, and then those counties asked for the legal assistance. And so as a result, we've got, as I mentioned, I think about 6 attorneys in the office who are doing that kind of work on behalf of counties. And I've projected it out for the next couple years, and that work is not going away just because there are people who have served their time, and essentially the choice is let them out after serving their time or civilly commit them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then the other was the predatory mortgage and lending. I understand there's a few bills running around that may or may not come to Commerce Committee and on to the floor. And understanding that with the drop in rates and the sale prices going through the roof, people were, you know, they're selling them faster than they could put up the signs. You know, as we've seen now, the housing market decline. I'm sure there's still bad actors out there, but in using the laws that are on the books to already either fine, incarcerate, whatever it may be, you know, as this, the home sales numbers drop, as we hear quite often or quite daily, actually, is this going to be another expanding, or is this just what we think is going to expand, and then we're now going to see a drop-off with the number of home sales dropping off?
Sure.
Attorney General?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, it seems to be a continuing issue or continuing problem, and a lot of it has related to refinancings of mortgage transactions. So people who were in a home, had a loan with a legitimate or reputable lender, and then, you know, sometimes they were watching late-night television and they were encouraged to do these cash-out refinancings, refinance your mortgage and refinance all your credit card debt and take out a new loan. And a lot of those are going to be repriced. People who are in these so-called interest-only or option adjustable rate mortgages were put in the products, but each spring they're going to be reset or repriced. And when that happens, typically people will complain that, well, we didn't know when we took it out that it was going to be repriced. We thought that initial offer was the permanent offer. Nobody ever explained to us the repricing. And so it is a what I view to be a really significant issue for the people of Minnesota and really for the state of Minnesota. By some estimates, the housing or the real estate market comprises 20% of the economy. I think something like 20 subprime mortgage lenders have now filed bankruptcy. You have subprime mortgage lenders who are under criminal investigation, some very large institutions. And it affects not just the individual families involved and the individual homeowners involved, but really affects the integrity of the marketplace as well. Most of these mortgages are, as you know, repackaged and resold on Wall Street via the secondary mortgage market. And so anyone who invests in those types of mortgage-backed securities or investment pools essentially become the victims as well. So it's a real issue, and I hope that working with you all, we can take a look at that in terms of some legislation that would hopefully address it as well.
Just one other question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Attorney General. The other was some of the more consumer stuff. I know we're there's a bill coming to Commerce soon about cell phones and data and some of the problems. And I understand that in some of the other committees we've had a problem sharing data, and as long as we're here at the table together, maybe we could get a commitment to share the data. Apparently there's stuff that's aggregated and real, and some of the other committee members had a problem getting some of that data. I don't know if it's been a miscommunication or just an inadvertent, you know, as we're flying around here toward getting close towards deadlines, sometimes things get forgotten. But I know a few of the other folks have had a problem getting some of these telecom numbers and complaint rates and aggregates versus real rates and comparison between Minnesota and some of the other states around the country. And if that were something that, you know, we could get a commitment from you to share, I would greatly appreciate that, especially, you know, I think Commerce is probably the last stop on the train for some of these bills. So we'd really appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, I'd be pleased to follow up with you and see what issues have not been answered to your satisfaction. I'm not aware of that as I sit here. I know some of the Attorney General complaint is classified as non-public information under the law, so if we get a request for a complaint data on a particular company, by law we're not allowed to give that out.
Sure.
And but I'd be pleased to follow up with you and see where the gap is and what kind of information we can provide that would satisfy your concerns.
That would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Rush.
And thank you for being here, Attorney General. My question is, and I apologize for being late, you may have already answered this, but I had a bill affecting clinical trials for pharmaceuticals. Did we already talk about pharmaceuticals at all? Okay. Well, then I'd really encourage you to hop on, not necessarily this, because I think it's successfully scuttled this year in clinical trials, but some of these pharmaceutical companies that are the subject of class actions, other attorney generals have hopped on these lawsuits. I forget the names of some of the drugs, but there are some seriously egregious conduct involving some of these big pharmaceutical companies where they have not disclosed information. And I just, you know, I can get you some of the information afterwards, but I would just ask that you take a look at that, and I can get you some additional information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, thank you for your input in the pharmaceutical industry. It is one of probably the more frequently sued industries in America by U.S. attorneys and attorneys general over a variety of practices, anti-competitive practices, antitrust issues, and so it is an area of interest and one of the areas that I've focused on as well and identified as an area of interest. So I'd be pleased to learn more information from you and work with you on that. Thank you.
Attorney General, I'd like to ask you, I had a town hall meeting in now. I had some mortgage brokers there, and the predatory lending bill did come up, and these folks are the first ones that want to regulate the bad mortgage brokers in the state that are causing some major problems within our state. However, they said that the bill that you have is really restrictive in a number of areas, kind of punishing mortgage brokers as a group. And I wanted to address that with you. I wanted to just to have you respond to that. There was something in the bill. They said something about even to the point of if somebody missed a mortgage payment, one mortgage payment, that they later on would have trouble even pursuing getting a mortgage later on in their lifetime. So could you just address some of those concerns?
Mr. Chairman, members, I would be pleased to, as I mentioned, to Representative Zeller's question, I view predatory mortgage lending as a very, very serious problem. It can create urban blight. It can wreak havoc on the families involved when people are put into these predatory loans and go into foreclosure. It creates havoc for the mortgage markets, for investors, and if we lose confidence in this state and people lose confidence in the mortgage market, we've got big problems because it is such a sizable part of the economy. So working with various people, including bankers and legal advocates and people who represent homeowners, we tried to put together a bill that I'd be pleased to work with you all on if there's ways to improve it, but it was to try to really focus on how to curb some of the abuses. For example, there's big abuses with something called stated income mortgages. They're also called low documentation or no documentation loans, and that's essentially where you can go into a mortgage broker, they write a loan without any documentation from you as to what your income even is. And so Minnesota was the lead state litigating against AmeriQuest mortgage company, which resulted in about $325 million settlement on that issue. But it was basically really people sometimes in their 80s who were convinced to refinance a 100-year-old farmhouse because these brokers came and sort of descended upon them. And the brokers didn't even require retrospectively a copy of their tax return. And so what the broker was able to do is essentially lie about their income, put down income they never made, jobs they didn't have, apartment leases they didn't have by subletting out their supposedly basement in their home apartment. And so, for instance, a bill tries to address that by saying you ought to have documentation, at least retrospectively look at a tax return to make sure people really have the income that you're putting down. That, you know, takes a few more extra minutes, I suppose, in a closing transaction, but really would make a lot of sense. Verifying the borrower's ability to repay. You saw this week the five federal banking regulators required something very similar, which is loans ought not to be made without verifying the ability to repay. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I think, just clamped down on these stated income loans. So a lot of what we're talking about in that legislation are things that are already being looked at or addressed by, for instance, the federal banking regulators as it relates to some of those entities, but those banking regulators don't regulate a lot of the entities, and so we're also trying to get at people who can be regulated by the state of Minnesota and try to address it. I know there could be a lot of urban lore with bills. It's certainly not, certainly the intent of that bill is to target the bad apples, recognizing there are an awful lot of legitimate business people who are doing a great job as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions for the Attorney General or staff?
I just have one.
Representative Kahn.
The question of terminology. When we address you, are we to address you as general or attorney general?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, you can call me whatever you'd like.
Appropriate. I know that there's got to be an appropriate form. What is it?
Typically, it's attorney general. General is how they call people, but I'm very informal in that respect, so please call me whatever you like.
Well, then the other thing, I believe I heard you kind of corrected a mistake that Representative Lesh made. When there are, what?
Attorneys
well,
general?
I just heard it wrong.
Attorneys
when there's,
general.
You know, like a gaggle of you, are you called attorneys general or attorney generals?
Attorneys general.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pat, it actually is attorneys general, but sometimes I will say attorney generals because attorneys general can be an awkward thing to say, but it's technically attorneys general, so appreciate the clarification.
Representative Lesh.
Chair, Representative Pat, it was my intent to coin a new term for that. So I think I succeeded.
as we digress here.
I did do it, Mr. Chairman. I did do a trip once with the Council of State Governments on environmental issues in Japan. And the only thing, and we noticed that we did have an attorney general from Tennessee, I think, with us, and we did notice that was the only Japanese word we could pick up when they called him Sojin.
All right. Well, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity. Okay. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
No other business before this committee. The State Government Finance Committee will be adjourned.